This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
About to proceed. So this is the third class on Qawaid al-Fiqhiyya, coherence of Sharia, the legal maxims with Hanbali and other applications. And if you remember, the bird's view is important. So I repeat myself a lot, just to make sure that you're familiar with the topic. So I'll try to zoom in on today's discussion. So al-Qawaid al-Fiqhiyya, the legal maxims, we said that we will divide the book into four parts. The first preliminary section of the book will be on introductions. The second will be on the grand legal maxims, the five that we kept on repeating every time. So you should remember them by now. الأمور بمقاصدها يقين لا يزول بالشك لا ضرر ولا ضرار المشقة تجلب التيسير العادة محكمة. So these are judged by their intentions. Certainty is not overruled by doubt. There should be no harm or reciprocation of harm. Hardship begets ease or concessions. And customs are given consideration. These are the grand legal maxims, and they have many branches. So the second section will be about them. The third section will be about the independent legal maxims that are short of the grand. They are not as comprehensive. They don't have as many applications as the grand legal maxims, but they are still universal legal maxims that have many applications. So that's the third section. And the fourth section will be on fiqhi regulators, which are like legal maxims, with one difference. So they only apply within sort of a chapter, or they have a smaller, narrower scope of operation than the regular legal maxims. So we are discussing the preliminary section, and we said that the preliminary section will cover the 10 principles that should be addressed when you introduce a subject for the first time. And we basically talked about those 10 principles several times, so we will not repeat here. But last couple of times, we were talking about the definition of the subject and the subject matter. Definition and subject matter. We're still trying to introduce the subject, and we're still trying to talk about the very beginnings of any introduction. So if you remember that we said that the definition, basically, or a ta'rif, is important. It's not It's not unimportant. It is important. You want a good definition, and we said that the good definition would be inclusive of everything that belongs to the defined and exclusive of everything that doesn't belong. And we said that it should be clear also. But remember from the first time we said definitions are neither necessary nor sufficient for conceptualization. We said that. And this is basically the thesis of Imam Ibn Taymiyyah's critique of Aristotelian logic, or part of his response to Aristotelian logic when it comes to Mabahith al-Tasawwurat, or the chapters on conceptualization. Definitions are neither necessary nor sufficient. So the definition that we have gone over, even after we address the subject matter, would not give you enough conceptualization. And for better discernment of al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya, you want to compare al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya to similar subjects. You want to compare the science to similar subjects, similar topics, similar sciences. And you want to know the relationship between this particular topic or discipline of knowledge and other disciplines of knowledge that are related. So we will talk today about the nisab, the relationships. When we talk about the relationship, we will talk about the relationship of al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya to the relationship of al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya to fiqh. All of this is about fiqh, right? Because you need to know the family of the particular discipline that you're studying, which family they belong to. We've defined that, we've talked about subject matter, but which family does it belong to, and what is the relationship between this discipline and other related disciplines? Of course, this is a fiqhi discipline. It's called the qawaad al-fiqhiyya. It is related to al-fiqh. And you want to remember that the Islamic worldview is what? Is based on إن الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات كانت لهم جنات الفردوس نزلا خالدين فيها لا يبغون عنها حولا. الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات. Those who had faith, those who were the believers who had faith and did righteous deeds or were righteous in their actions. So it is basically faith and righteousness. These are the two pillars. And when it comes to righteousness, there is the righteousness of the interior and the righteousness of the exterior, right? Al-batin wal-zahir, amal al-batin wal-zahir, internal actions or interior and exterior. So if that is clear that that will be sought for themselves and the sciences, we seek them for themselves, or what? Fixing the faith, that is, you know, aqidah. It is not apologetics. Most of the aqidah that we do is actually apologetics, not aqidah. It's the sort of the pure aqidah. These are the things that Muslims need to know about their Lord and their belief system. So it is aqidah. And then when it comes to fixing your interior, that is tazkiya, also called tasawuf. And when it comes to fixing your exterior, that is fiqh, your actions. You know, so all of the actions, all of the exterior actions, it belongs to the discipline. They belong to the discipline of fiqh. Fiqh itself is divided into ibadat and fiqh al-mu'amalat. Basically, your relationship with Allah, fiqh of transactions, that is your relationship with everything else, including yourself. So when it comes to your relationship with yourself, that would be mainly. And when it comes to your relationship with others, so the mu'amalat will be divided into the bi'u' financial transactions, not necessarily just bi'u', like financial fiqh in general. And then you have al-usra, the fiqh of family, which doesn't only include marriage, but marriage and divorce and custody and all of those issues, family. So, and they usually add fiqh al-ibadat first, because that these are the rights of Allah, they should come first. And then after fiqh al-ibadat, they had the fiqh of financial transactions, because once you have known your Lord, you need basically to fend for yourself, to support yourself. And once you have been capable of supporting yourself, they move on to fiqh al-nikah, or the fiqh of family, because now you should have a family. You know, start with knowing your Lord, commitment to your Lord, you know, fending for yourself, then having a family. And they after this, they will add fiqh al-qada wal-hudud wal-jinayat, and so on. And sometimes they put jihad at the end, and sometimes they put it between ibadat and mu'amalat. So they say that after Allah fulfills His favor on you, so now, you know, you've been able to support yourself, you have a family and so on, then you transgress. And, you know, that for most of the people comes after the favor is completed, Allah's favor is completed on them, then you need qada and hudud and jinayat. You need the fiqh of penalties, punishments, you know, judiciary and so on, to basically deter transgression. Jihad is sometimes placed between fiqh al-ibadat and mu'amalat, because in one sense it belongs to ibadat, and in another sense it belongs to amalat, mu'amalat, or since it is dhirwat al-sanam, or the peak or the pinnacle, they put it at the end, because that is when you have done, you have committed to Allah and to the creations, and you have done your best. Now you will need to resist temptations that attempt to make you swerve, or to make you deviate from the straight path. And that is what jihad is about. So this is fiqh, and this is intended for itself. This is one of the end sciences. There are three end sciences. Aqidah, that's not apologetics, aqidah, fiqh, and tazkiyah. These are the three end sciences. So what about the Quran and the Sunnah? Well, eventually the Quran and the Sunnah will tell you about aqidah, fiqh, and tazkiyah. So these are the sources. These are called source sciences. And it's extremely important that you read the Quran and the Sunnah. But when you read the Quran, Allah is telling you about these things. Allah is telling you about your aqidah. Allah is telling you about your actions, and correct them. So that is ultimately, these are ultimately the end sciences. So let us figure out now how al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya would relate to these end sciences. It is a subsidiary or subordinate branch of fiqh, subordinate to fiqh. It is subordinate to fiqh. It belongs, it's related to the fiqhi sciences or the legal sciences, subordinate to fiqh. Subordinate to fiqh. And what are the other legal sciences? What are the other legal sciences? So we have different groups of legal sciences. Once you've mastered them, you have mastered fiqh. They belong to these groups. The first thing is usul, which is basically principles of jurisprudence. Principles of jurisprudence. It's ilm usul al-fiqh. Right? And it is an important science. Why? Because it is basically the discipline that will enable the faqih to extrapolate or to deduce rulings from the detailed evidences. So it's a foundational science. It is an important science because it is the science that that examines adillat al-shar'a al-ijmaliyya, or the evidences of sharia, Quran, sunnah, ijma', qiyas, and so on. And it's the science And so that shows you how to basically deduce rulings. And we will come to talk a little bit more about related to usul al-fiqh is علم المقاصد. Maqasid are the objectives of Sharia. So this is related to usul al-fiqh. In fact, علم المقاصد belongs, علم المقاصد is an important science. It's an important discipline of knowledge. However, you will not find people who are basically authoring on maqasid. Before Imam al-Shatibi, rahimahullah, you didn't find people authoring in maqasid per se. Because in reality, علم المقاصد belongs under one. So when we talk about علم أصول الفقه, علم أصول الفقه is about what? Giving you the tools to deduce rulings from the detailed evidences. So it is here, the مباحث or the different topics of علم أصول الفقه will have to do with المستثمر منه طريقة الاستثمار. So it has to do with الأدلة, evidences. It has to do with الأحكام, rulings. And it has to do with طريقة الاستدلال. الاستدلال, which means a deduction. Deduction, how to deduce rulings from the evidences. And it has to do with the المستدل or المستثمر. مستثمر comes from what? ثمر is fruit. مستثمر is the one who picks the fruit. It's the مجتهد. The مجتهد who eventually will be able to extract rulings from the evidences through a known process of deduction or استثمار. Okay? So that is the مجتهد. That is what usul al-fiqh is about, isn't it? It's about these things. Under al-adilla, you will find al-qiyas. And under al-qiyas, you will find mabahith al-illa. Qiyas, which is analogy, or analogical deduction. Analogical deduction. Okay? So that's al-qiyas. Under al-qiyas, you find certain mabahath that are called mabahath al-illa. Illa would be what? The rationale, the legal rationale behind, you know, the effective cause, the legal rationale, the manat of the hukm, and effective cause. Or rationale. Or ratio legis. Okay, so under al-illa, you will find mabahith al-munasaba. Al-munasaba means what? It means suitability, you know. Is this particular description suitable to hinge the ruling on it or not? Is this particular description, you know? So a Bedouin man came and urinated in the masjid, and the Prophet ordered them to basically submerge it in water. So what is in the description here that would basically call for the, you know, submerging the urine? Does the fact that he was Bedouin have to do anything with this? No, it doesn't. Therefore, even the fact that he was a man doesn't have much to do with this. Therefore, these are all descriptions that will be canceled by the mujtahid to zoom in on the description that will be madrak al-hukm, that will cause the hukm. It's urine, and urine is najis. Okay? So, al-munasaba, suitability. It is something that you need to be familiar with. Now, under mabahith al-munasaba, you need to study al-maqasid. You need to be aware, you need to be cognizant of the objectives of the Sharia so that you could know which description is consequential. and which description is inconsequential, tardi, inconsequential. So this is where maqasid, you know, this is where maqasid belongs. Am I trying to belittle maqasid here? No, I'm not. But I'm trying to show you where, you know, the relationships, the family tree. But then maqasid became a discipline by itself. Certainly, some people abuse the concept of maqasid or objectives of Sharia. That is why if people are not grounded in the qawa'id, all of the qawa'id, qawa'id al-maqasid and qawa'id al-fiqhiyya and so on, they will end up abusing the concept of al-maqasid. Because if maqasid al-sharia are to preserve life and preserve the religion or people's faith, life, intellect, progeny, property, and some people add honor, and you may say that it belongs to the same category as progeny. But anyway, if the Sharia is after preserving essentials, after preserving these essentials, how do you differentiate Sharia thing else? Because, like, which law in the world that would not claim to be preserving, you know, I'm not quite sure about faith, but to be preserving life, you know, intellect, any property, and so on. So if the Sharia is just about this, if this is enough to know, to be able to do your, you know, ijtihad and so on, then there is no difference between the Sharia and any other law. But you'll have, the Sharia does not only point to the objectives, but it gives you a roadmap how to get there. If you take the objectives and throw away the roadmap, this is unfair, okay? So anyway, so you have al-usul, you have al-maqasid, and you have a bunch of sciences that are called al-takhrij, ulum al-takhrij. Al-takhrij, takhrij would be translated as extrapolation. Which means what? These are, you know, if you don't study this, but you're smart enough, it will be in your brain. But if you study this, certainly it will help you. It will help you have a grasp of these concepts. What do we mean by extrapolation? So you have usul al-fiqh, right? The fundamentals or the principles of jurisprudence. And you have the detailed rulings. You have fiqh. You have the usul, you have fiqh. So takhrij or extrapolation is when you extrapolate the branches from the usul, the furu'ah, the detailed rulings, the principles of jurisprudence. They will show you, you know, certain books will show you. So the Hanafis, Malikis, Shafi'is, and Hanbalis, they disagreed over this, and they will trace it back. They will say they disagreed over this ruling. They will trace it back to their different usul that resulted in this disagreement. Their different usul that resulted in this disagreement. Because the disagreement between the scholars are not infallible. They make mistakes, and sometimes they're inconsistent, and they can sometimes have double standard. They're human beings. But they're great human beings. They are learned human beings. So mostly, their disagreements were based on usul that they had that reflected on their deduction and led them to arrive at different conclusions. So to basically to be able to trace back this far'a to this asl, this detailed ruling to this asl. The Hanafis said this because they have this asl. The Malikis said this because they have this asl. Tracing back, you know, that's takhrij, extrapolation. But you could also do the opposite, extrapolation of usul from furu'a. And you could extrapolate usul from usul and furu'a from furu'a. Anyway, this is a discipline in and of itself. It's a great discipline. It's called the takhrij. And it is very helpful for the faqih to have mastery of fiqh. So this is basically a category of legal sciences There are other categories. Okay, maybe we'll just. So we said the usul and then the sciences that are related to the usul. And then you will have ayat wa ahadith al ahkam. Ayat wa ahadith al ahkam. Which are basically the verses of the Quran and the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam that pertain to rulings, pertain to rulings, and these are considered one of some of the disciplines. Some of the important disciplines pertain to fiqh, ayat wa hadith al-ahkam, the verses. There are books that are separate, like when you study Bulugh al-Maram, for instance, or you study like a commentary on Bulugh al-Maram, when you study al-Muntaqa by Imam ibn Taymiyyah, the grandfather, not the famous one, you're studying the hadith of al-ahkam. And then there are ayat al-ahkam. And you know, even the tafsir of Imam al-Qurtubi rahimahullah is mainly about al-ahkam. It's to a great extent about al-ahkam. So, and there are different books. Al-Sabuni, Sheikh Sabuni rahimahullah, had a very nice book on ayat al-ahkam for the beginners. They can benefit from it a great deal as well. So this is another category of fiqhi sciences. And then you have one category that is called al-fatwa, al-qada, and the siyasa al-shar'iyya. Siyasa al-shar'iyya. Fatwa is fatwa, issue an edict. Qada is judiciary. Siyasa al-shar'iyya, how would you translate the siyasa al-shar'iyya? Siyasa al-shar'iyya would be my preferred translation is Sharia-compliant politics. Sharia-compliant politics. It is not Sharia politics. It's not Shara'i politics. It's Sharia-compliant politics. Okay, and then the legal basis. That's, you want to translate it as legal basis for the politics? Yeah. Like we'll just call siyasa sharia legal basis for politics? It's possible. It's possible, but you know, sharia compliant politics is easier. Yeah. Anyway, it's Islamic guidelines. Governance, and this is a hotly debated topic, governance. Islam does not provide detailed rulings when it comes to governance. It provides guidelines that a Muslim should be aware of and should certainly be sensitive to. But does Islam provide detailed rulings when it comes to governance? No, because that's part of the genius of Islam, is that when things are fixed and constant, it provides a great deal of detail. Like if you compare a number of ahadiths that are related to prayers, for instance, or to wudu, to the number of ahadiths that are related to governance, you will find that difference, because things that are subject to circumstantial variables, Islam provided guidelines. So that is why it is best to call this Sharia-compliant politics. There are still guidelines. These guidelines are important to observe, in governance, in politics, and so on and so forth. But they are still guidelines. Okay. And if there are some detailed rulings, those detailed rulings are not basically the rule. They are the exception. But the guidelines It was meant for this particular section of activities to be regulated by the Sharia. It will not be flexible enough to adapt to circumstantial variables. Okay, so anyway, and then you have like another group of fiqh sciences that are called al-madakhil, tariq al-tashri'a, and tabaqat al-fuqaha. Madakhil would be intros, introductions. So when you study fiqh, you want a book that will basically familiarize you with fiqh and familiarize you with the writings on fiqh and the developments within the different madhahib, you know, how to study a particular madhab, the terminology used by the people in that madhab, because the terminologies differ. So if you basically studied the Shafi'i madhab and now you're trying to study the Maliki madhab, you may be lost because they have different terminology. So you need to familiarize yourself with the terminology of the people in this particular madhab and so on. So these are al-madakhil introductions. You know, a famous book on madakhil. And we said that sciences develop. So many of the things that the scholars had in their mind, they put them down, you know, for the students of knowledge to learn them in a systematic way. So when we say that Madkhal ibn Badran is a great book on al-madakhil, we're not saying that al-Mardawi did not write on madakhil, but, you know, the Ibn Badran, who's largely a contemporary scholar, wrote a separate book that is called the Madkhal to the fiqh of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal. So, you know, some of these sciences came later than others. You know, they were crystallized. It's not like the science itself, the concepts themselves were absent. No, they were not absent. But they dedicated, they made it a discipline by itself and started to author on it at different stages. And some of these sciences came much later than others. And we will see when we come to the development of al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya that it was one of the later sciences, not the earlier science. So fiqh preceded usul in authorship, even though conceptually fiqh cannot come before usul. You need usul to have fiqh. You need the principles of jurisprudence to be able to use rulings from the detailed evidences. But in terms of authorship and being a discipline by itself, we see the wada of ilm al-usul al-fiqh, the founder of the science of usul al-fiqh, is Imam al-Shafi'i in his book al-Risala. So this came, you know, about 200 years after fiqh came about. So that does not mean that usul, but the authorship, you know, this made a discipline of knowledge later. So anyway, al-madakhil tariq al-tashri'a would be history of legislation, and we had a series here, like when I first moved to this area, we had a series on tariq al-tashri'a, or history of legislation, which will tell you about the development of legislation from the time of the Sahaba, even from the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam until today. The development in the discipline of fiqh, the different developments in the discipline of fiqh, and the different phases and stages, and people disagree over these. Some, you know, a lot of people disagree over these things and the different characterizations. But anyway, it's a discipline. It's an important discipline. Tabaqat al-fuqaha, which would be the layers of fuqaha or the biographies of the fuqaha, and if someone does not know the biographies of the fuqaha, can they still be a faqih? They likely can be a faqih. It's not expected that someone is really a faqih in a particular madhab. Like you just, it's hard to imagine that you'd be a Hanbali faqih and not know Ibn Qudama, the Imam Ibn Qudama, or a Shafi'i faqih and not know the Imam al-Nawawi. It's just hard. But anyway, you, like you don't, you know, it's not essential for fiqh in and of itself. And then you have a group of sciences that are most related now, which are al-qawa'id, al-furuq. Al-qawa'id, and I would say al-ashbah wal-nadha'ir, qawa'id, the legal maxims that we're studying here, and al-ashbah wal-nadha'ir would be parallels and analogs, and we will come to the differentiation between them later. Al-furuq, al-qawa'id wal-ashbah wal-nadha'ir are more related to each other, and then al-furuq, distinctions between the different applications. And then you have al-nazariyat al-fiqhiyya, which is basically al-nazariyat, and that is legal theories. And you have, I think that this is enough for this group. So now these are all disciplines related to the science of fiqh, which is sought for itself, because it is how you correct your ibadah and mu'amala, your worship and your dealings with people, including yourself. Okay, so we said that al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya would be subsidiary to ilm al-fiqh, or subordinate to ilm al-fiqh. Does that mean that the relationship between al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya and ilm al-fiqh is umum wa khusus mutlaq? Which means what? Umum wa khusus mutlaq means universal inclusion, particular denial. Let me tell you, when you have, we talked before about something called al-kulli, al-juz'i, right? If you remember, al-juz'i is the particular, and the kulli is the universal. What is the difference between universal and particular? Universal does not preclude ishtiraq, that you have different members within the same categories. Different members within the same category, that would be universal. Particular, there is only one member in the category. One member in the category. So Muhammad is a particular entity. This Muhammad is a particular entity. So this would be like a dot, and this would be like a circle. If you say this is a particular and this is a universal. The relationship between the particular and the universal can be one of two things. This is either here or here. If it is here, this is umum wa khusus mutlaq. This is universal inclusion. So the kulli, the juz'i is a member of the kulli, just a member of the kulli. And if it is here, it's called tabayun, variance, okay? But when you have a kulli and kulli, when you have two kullis, kulli and kulli, so you have a kulli and you have another kulli. Okay, so this has members and this has members. The relationship between them can be one of four things. We're trying to figure out the relationship between fiqh and qawa'id fiqhiyya now. Fiqh and qawa'id fiqhiyya. The relation, they're both kulli, universal, right? When we talk about qawa'id fiqhiyya, we're not talking just like about a particular, we're talking about something that's universal. And the same applies to fiqh. And the relationship between them can be one of four things. We have two kulli or two universal categories. One of them is called tabayun, and that is variance. These are the Venn diagrams. The Venn diagrams are very helpful, by the way. Variance, Okay. On the very opposite side, you have, this is a kulli, and this is another kulli. Okay, you should not have seen two lines. I meant complete overlap. When you have meant complete overlap, this is called a tasawi, which is equivalence. So, hijara, stones, and humans. Stones and humans. Stones, humans. No human is a stone, no stone is a human. Okay, this is variance. Here, when we say al-dahik wal-katib, for instance, this one is al-dahik, laughing, and one is al-katib. Katib means writer, these two, there is a difference between al mafhum, which is the conception, the notion. The notion is al mafhum. The mafhum of al dahik and katib, the laughing and the writer, is it the same? No. So why am I having them overlap like this? Because al-misdaq is the same. The denotation, there is a difference between notion and denotation. Notion is the mafhum. Al-misdaq, things in the outs, in the external reality to whom this term applies. In the misdaq, or the external reality, or the denotation, they are the same thing. Every dahik is katib. And every katib is dahik, because these are called what? Qassa for the human being, These are called qassa for the human being. Do you remember the difference between the qassa and the property and the fasl, the differentia? We said they, but anyway, just go back to the first session. But anyway, these are particular to human beings, particular to human beings. And when we say this, we don't mean by actuality, we mean by potency. So because not every human being is able to write, but by potency, you have the potency, you have the ability to write if they teach you, So not every human being is a writer, but by potency. بالقوة, not بالفعل, by potency, not actuality. So this is a relationship of equivalence, تساوي, okay? And then, you have this relationship now. And this relationship, okay? So four relationships only. This is tabayun, this is variance. Stones and humans, no stone is human, no human stone. Here, if you say black and bird, not all black things are birds, and not all birds are black, right? This is a universal category. This is a universal category. Do they overlap? Yes. If you find the black bird, then that is the area of overlap. This is called what? Partial overlap in the Venn diagram, or intersection. Intersection. So you call it partial overlap, or you call it intersection. What do we call it? We call it umum wa khusus wajhi. عموم وخصوص وجهي. Why do we call it عموم وخصوص؟ عموم means generality, خصوص means particularity or specificity. وجهي in one aspect, from one وجه, from one aspect. So let's finish this. What is this? This is universal inclusion, or this is just complete inclusion. This is a kulli, and this is a kulli. So when you say حيوان and insan, animal and human, the insan belongs to الحيوان, but you know, so every insan is حيوان, not every حيوان is insan. Every human is an animal, not every animal is a human. So that's why we call universal inclusion particular denial. Some حيوان are not insan, but every insan is a حيوان. This is the universal, you know, affirmative. Every insan is حيوان, universal inclusion. And the exclusion here, or the particular denial, some حيوان is not insan. Some of the animals are not humans. And you can apply this to many, many things, you know. So this is called the عموم وخصوص مطلق. عموم وخصوص مطلق, absolute. So the relationship between them here is one is completely contained by the other. One is completely contained by the other. Would you say that القواعد الفقهية in relation to علم الفقه is عموم وخصوص مطلق, universal inclusion, or would you say partial overlap, intersection? Who would say عموم وخصوص مطلق? One science includes the other. Okay, who would say partial overlap? Okay. And the rest are the rest are too afraid to say anything. Huh? What? The issue is wajhi, like this, intersection or like this. Okay, most of the people said it is umum wa khusus mutlaq, it's absolute inclusion. You know, complete inclusion. One includes the other. I don't blame you, because it would seem like this. It would seem like this. However, some of the scholars would say no, it is not عموم وخصوص مطلق. It is عموم وخصوص وجهي. It is partial overlap. There is intersectionality here. But how come? How come? So when we talk about fiqh, there are some fiqhi details that do not necessarily, cannot be fitted under a qa'idah fiqhiyya. There are many fiqhi details that may not fit under a qa'idah fiqhiyya. You will tell me, fine, still applies. You know, there is, fiqh is larger and qa'id fiqhiyya is a subordinate science. It is here. So if you're saying that some fiqhi rulings do not necessarily belong to a qa'idah fiqhiyya, that's fine. I'm okay. I can live with this. However, you know, they may come back and say some qa'id fiqhiyya may have applications outside of fiqh. Some qa'id fiqhiyya may have applications outside of fiqh. Therefore, you will have to use this diagram. Now, is it just like this? No, it may be, you know. So this diagram can be drawn like this, right? So this would be al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya, and this would be al-fiqh. So it doesn't have to be like this, you know, but there is partial overlap, intersection. Why do we say this? Why do we say this? Remember one of the qawaid al-fiqhiyya, al-yaqin la yazul bil-shak, which means what? Certainty is not overruled by doubt. This can be applied in aqidah, not just fiqh. Can you apply this in aqidah? Of course, you could apply this in aqidah. In fact, we always, recall this qaida in aqidah. This is actually a way of life. It is not, you could apply this in your episteme, so in your epistemology, in your way of knowing things. You could always apply this in your way of knowing things, which is called epistemology. So it is much wider in its scope of operation than fiqh. Yaqeen la yazul bishak. Certainty is not overruled by doubt. And this is something that we have to learn to apply. Inshallah, when we discuss this qaida, we will see that this qaida is universally applicable, and we have to learn to apply this qaida. If you say ma buniya ala batil fa huwa batil, that which is based on batil, something invalid, or that which is invalid in itself. So if you ma buniya ala batil fa huwa batil, that which is based on batil is batil, or invalid is invalid. So is this applicable outside the fiqh? Of course it is applicable. لَإِنْ أَشْرَكْتَ لَيَحْبَطَنَّ عَمَلُكَ. What does that mean? If you ascribe partners to Allah, your deeds will be invalidated, will be ruined. That is مَبُنِي عَلَى بَاطِلْ فَهَا بَاطِلْ. Your deeds are basically, they have to be hinged on faith. مَنْ عَمِلَ صَالِحًا مِنْ ذَكْرٍ أَوْ أُنْثَى وَهُوَ مُؤْمِنٌ. He who does righteousness, whether male or female, while a believer, وَهُوَ مُؤْمِنٌ. So if it is not based on faith, then it is batil. If it is based on invalid faith, then it is invalid. Therefore, the relationship between al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya and al-fiqh is umum wa khusus wajhi. It is partial overlap or intersection, not umum wa khusus kulli. Because there are some qawa'id that can be applied outside the discipline of fiqh. Clear? No questions about this? Yes. Can khusus fall into tasawwur? Well, these are all tasawwurat, these are all parts of tasawwur. In order for us, the relationships are important for us in tasawwur. So khusus is basically specificity and or particularity, and umum is universality or generality. They're all part of the mabahath of tasawwur. They're all part of the concepts of tasawwur. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It works both ways. Not all rulings of fiqh are, subordinate to certain maxims, and not all maxims do also have applications outside of fiqh. We could use the same terminology. We can use the al-yaqeen bil-shak. You could use the same terminology. When you say ma buniya ala batil fa huwa batil, to say that someone who does not have faith, their actions will be basically invalidated, that you could say ma buniya ala batil fa huwa batil. You could use the same terminology. Yeah. No, all the qawaid can be applied to fiqh, but they have applications outside of fiqh as well. So that is why this area where there is a qaida and it is being applied outside of fiqh, it does not belong to that area of intersection. It belongs to the area where it is qawaid, but the application is not fiqhi. The application is aqadi or epistemological or some other application.
Inshallah, if the questions can be until the question and answer time, just yeah. Clarifications, inshallah. Jazakallah khair.
Yeah. I just wanted you to ask for clarifications, because certainly the questions, we will come to the segment for the questions and there will be a multitude of questions. But usually when we try to do this in the past to make it more interactive, it was like a disaster. Because the question can basically derail us completely from the topic. So what I wanted to say here is, we're out of time almost. What I wanted to say here is, now it is important for us to make tamyiz or to distinguish between al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya and related sciences. I'm going to take some time from, I just want to finish this. I have some time from al-adab al-mufrad. So you have al-qawaid al-usuliyya. This is basically usul, principles of jurisprudence. You have al-qawaid al-maqasidiyya. These are the objectives of Sharia. And the objectives, the science of the objectives of Sharia has qawaid, has principles. So principles of the science of the objectives of Sharia, principles of maqasid. You have al-nazariyat al-fiqhiyya. Legal theories. You have al-furuq. These are called the distinctions. You have al-ashbah wa al-nazair. These are called parallels and analogues. And then you have al-madarik, legal bases. And then you have ad-dawabit, the regulators, which we said are just like qawaid, but with some with limited scope of operation. We need to understand the difference between al-qawaid and each one of these so that we can have complete tasawwur, conceptualization of al-qawaid. So when we talk about, if you take al-qawaid, Usuliyya, for instance, if we take al-qawaid al-usuliyya, what would be the differences between al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya and al-qawaid al-usuliyya? First of all, what is the subject matter? The subject matter of al-fiqh and the subject matter of al-usul. Subject matter of al-fiqh is what? Human action. To basically designate a legal value for every human action. Designate a legal value for every human action. That's what fiqh is about. So human actions. The actions of the accountable individual. أفعال المكلفين. The actions of the accountable individuals. What is the subject matter of usul? الأدلة. أدلة الشريعة. The evidences of Sharia. We are examining the evidence of Sharia, the Quran, the Sunnah, Qiyas, and so on. to show how to deduce rulings from these evidences. And the method of deduction is part of the usul al-fiqh, the adilla, the rulings, these are all. And the person who's doing this also is included in the topics of usul al-fiqh. You understand now the difference between the two in terms of their subject matter. Qawa'id al-fiqhiyya are regulators. Qa'ida is a regulator. Qawa'id regulate sciences. So al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya will regulate the science of fiqh. Qawa'id al-usuliyya will regulate the science of usul. If you understand the difference in the subject matter, then you have understood the difference between qawa'id al-fiqhiyya and qawa'id al-usuliyya. Which one, let's go over some of the differences here that I mentioned. Where do we get the qawa'id al-usuliyya from? Qawa'id al-usuliyya come from where? Istimdad. From the language and reason. Language and reason. When we say ظاهر الأمر الوجوب where الأمر يقتضي الوجوب والنهي يقتضي التحريم الأمر يقتضي الوجوب ما لم يصرفه صارف of course والنهي يقتضي التحريم الأمر is command. Commands. يقتضي imply. وجوب is وجوب. Being wajib. Being compulsory, mandatory. Okay. نهي prohibition implies تحريم, haramness. Okay. Who said this? The language and reason. Language and reason. Because al-amr in language is a demand from someone with authority who, it's an emphatic demand. It's a demand of action. And nahi is a demand of abstention from someone who has authority to give you an order. So then it is the muqtada al-lugha, and language and reason. So if your father tells you, get me a cup of water, if you don't get him a cup of water, you have disobeyed your father. This is consequential and unpraiseworthy. So al-amr should imply obligation or wujub unless مَالَمْ يَصْرَفْهُ صَارِفْ unless something diverts it from wujub to istihbab to basically a recommendation. But the default for al-amr is al-wujub. This is qa'ida usuliyya. This is an usuli qa'ida. Because I take this qa'ida and make fiqh. That is why usul would come before fiqh. Now I will take this qa'ida and then I will say that the, aqimu salah, simply, establish the prayer. Of course, aqimu salah, it's almost necessary knowledge for you as a Muslim that this is wujub. But any command from the shara, any order, anything, any command from the shara would be indicating wujub until something diverts it from wujub. So I took it now and I applied it, and I applied it to this text of revelation because Allah did not say salah is wajib. Allah said, "Aqimu salah, establish the prayer." And how did the fuqaha give the wujub value? One of the five legal values that we talked about before, Hanafis made them seven. So how did the fuqaha give that one category of values to salah? Through this principle, al-amr yaqtadi al-wujub. A command implies obligation or wujub. Legal maxims, you have to have to tasawwur of how legal maxims developed. So, and where is the istimdad of the legal maxims? The istimdad or the source of al-qawaad al-usuliyya is language and reason. Language and reason. We said reason says, if your father says you bring me a cup of water and you don't, that's an act of disobedience. That's reason. And muqtada al-lugha, language. Okay, so now when it comes to al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya, that we will talk about this in greater detail, but now we're just trying to sort things out. But al-istimdad of al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya comes from your inductive examination of fiqh, the body of fiqh. Therefore, does it precede or follow fiqh? Follows. Qawaad al-usuliyya would precede because you need it to make fiqh. And then after you have all the detailed rulings of fiqh here, the fuqaha examine all of those detailed rulings. And then once they have found recurrence of a particular concept and they detect a pattern in the rulings, a pattern. Qawaad al-fiqhiyya are patterns. Once they have detected a pattern, they formulate it into a qaida. They formulate this pattern into a qaida. So this is called inductive examination, istiqra, of the detailed rulings, the entire body of fiqh. We're making istiqra, that is why it followed. And that's why when we talk about al-wada an tatawwur and the development of the science of al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya, we will see that it came hundreds of years after fiqh. It followed. Now we have this body of fiqh, and we're examining the entire body of fiqh, and we're detecting patterns. These patterns, I would call them the threads that connect the pearls of fiqh. So there are many, many pearls, there are many detailed rulings, and you're connecting, you know, like 100 of them with one thread. And you're saying the, you know, these rulings are such because al-yaqeen la yazul bishak, or certainty is not overruled by doubt. So we established here a pattern. Now, can you go back and find substantiation in the Quran and the Sunnah for this qaida? Of course, many times. In fact, many of the qawaid are nas, a text of revelation, nas shar'i. So al-umur bimaqasidha, you could basically substitute with this with in al-amal biniyat. You could say al-amal biniyat. In fact, some of the scholars for the blessings of the words of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam just use al-amal biniyat instead of al-umur bimaqasidha. When you come to la darar wa la dirar, that's actually a hadith. La darar, that is actually the verbatim wording of the hadith. There should be no harm or reciprocation of harm. Now, when you come to something like al-yaqeen la yazul bishak, can you find, you know, evidence for this in, you know, the sunnah of the Prophet? Of course. You know, we will come to this and we will say that when the Prophet ﷺ said, if you find something in your, like, in your stomach and you are in your musalla, don't leave until you smell something or yasma sawtan aw yajid rihan, until you hear something or smell something. So he's telling you, go by the certainty, the default certainty, until you are certain that you broke your wudu. So, and so on and so forth. So al-qawaad al-fiqhiyya, you could find subsets. Sometimes you may not. Sometimes they would be simply taken out of the patterns. We have seen a pattern here, and then we are extrapolating a principle from this pattern. But oftentimes, you could go back and find evidence for them in the Quran and the Sunnah. But the way they developed is by this inductive reading. The way they developed is by this inductive reading, and thereafter they were formulated into those basically eloquent short formulas that we will have. So that is the difference between al-qawaid al-usuliyya and al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya. One precedes fiqh, one follows fiqh. One comes from the language and reason. One comes from the inductive reading of fiqh itself. Al-qawaid al-usuliyya are more constant and universal than al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya. Al-qawaid al-usuliyya would be more constant and universal than al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya. So they apply without exceptions. Without exceptions. Al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya, as we will discuss and we have discussed, have many exceptions. But we said they are still universal, right? Okay. Well, some people thought that they are aghlabi, not kulli. They are predominant, not universal. And we say no. When you have some exceptions, that does not compromise their universality, because whenever you have an exception, you will be able to explain it. Had there not been a reason for an exception, كانت القاعدة طردت. The qaida would have been completely universal, would have been completely consistent, completely universal. But you will find that this exception basically belonged to another qaida. Belong to another qaida, or to a nas, a shara, or something of that nature. So these, they are kulli. They're both kulli. They're both universal. However, al-qawaid al-usuliyya, the principles of jurisprudence, are more constant, muttarid, consistent than and universal than al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya. Having said that, it is important to know that al-qawaid al-usuliyya and al-fiqhiyya yatadakhalan. There is a great deal of intersectionality between al-qawaid al-usuliyya and al-qawaid al-fiqhiyya. And the same qaida can be used as usuliyya and fiqhiyya. When you say, for instance, al-asl fi al-ashya al-ibaha, this is an important qaida. It is both usuliyya and fiqhiyya. Al asl is what? Default. Fi in al ashya, all things. Al ibaha is permissibility. So the default is in all things is permissibility. Is that the default in all actions? All things. Okay. What if you want to apply this to actions? You will separate between ibadat and mu'amalat. The default in ibadat is a tawqif that you have, in order for you to call it ibadah or an act of worship, you have to trace it back to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And the default in mu'amalat is permissibility. Default in mu'amalat is permissibility. So whenever the financial sector comes up with a new contract, we will say, what is haram about it to forbid it? We will not say, how can we nubihu, or how can we legalize it or permit it? We will ask ourselves, what is haram about it to forbid it? You know, and usually you would say, the riba, you know, gharar, ghabn, these would be the bigger ones. jahala, etc., part of the gharar, riba, and undue risk-taking, usury, undue risk-taking, and inequity, you would be looking for something to forbid it. But anyway, is this a qa'ida usuliyya? Yes. The usuli would look at this and say, this is a dalil ijmali, dalil kulli lil-sharia. This is one of adillat al-sharia, one of adillat al-sharia that we use to deduce rulings is al-asl fi al-ashya al-ibaha. So I don't need a proof to say something is halal. I need a proof to say it is haram. Okay? And then, can the faqih, can we use this as a qa'ida fiqhiyya? Yes. The faqih now who is using qawa'id is not concerned about the higher level of abstraction, the adilla of al-shara in abstraction. No, they're asking him about crocodiles, or they're asking him about, you know, elephants. I'm not going to say it. Imam Ahmad said, I have not seen anyone with a greater nab or canine teeth than an elephant, meaning that it belongs to the, the prohibition of all predatory animals that have canine teeth. But it's a controversial issue. So someone may say, الأصل في الأشياء الإباحة, the default is permissibility. Whatever animals you find, you know, like when people came to the Americas, they found animals that they were not familiar with, right? And then if you were a Muslim, you would say, الأصل في الأشياء الإباحة. You will certainly, you know, predatory animals with canine teeth, you will exclude from this. But if you found an animal that is not predatory with canine teeth or claws, then you will say, الأصل في الأشياء الإباحة. I don't have to find the proof on the premise. This is the faqih now using it as either faqhiyya to apply it to a particular action. Can I eat this? The faqih will tell you, الأصل في الأشياء الإباحة. You know, the default is permissibility. So one, you know, the same ruling, when we talk about sadd al-dhara'i' or blocking the means to evil, sadd al-dhara'i' or blocking the means, it doesn't say blocking the means to what, but of course it is blocking the means to evil, not to good. Sadd al-dhara'i', blocking the means. This is, in usul al-fiqh, it's a matter of disagreement between the scholars in the different madhahib. Is this one of the adillat al-sharia, one of adillat al-sharia, or not one of adillat al-sharia? The Malikis and Hanbalis would tend to accept this as one of adillat al-sharia. The Hanafis and Shafi'is say no, it is not. But when it comes to it as a qa'ida fiqhiyya, in application, in the application of the fuqaha, they universally apply. Regardless of their disagreement on the usul over blocking the means, you will find them in their applications blocking the means to evil. So as a qaida fiqhiyya, as a qaida usuliyya, it may be a matter of disagreement, but in application or as a qaida fiqhiyya, it's universally applied. I am happy that we at least finished the difference between al-qawa'id al-fiqhiyya and al-qawa'id al-usuliyya, because that is the most important distinction. Next time, we will finish the difference between qawa'id al-fiqhiyya, qawa'id al-maqasidiyya, or the principles of objectives of sharia, and nazariyat al-fiqhiyya, the legal theories, and al-furuq, the distinctions, ashbah al-nadha'ir, parallels and analogues, al-madarik, legal bases, and الضوابط regulators. قول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك اشهد ان لا اله الا انت استغفرك واتوب اليك. And maybe we should have a break for 12 minutes and come back at 9:30 inshallah.